the nature of the work, that very likely would have tipped that factor more against fair use. So you have to be real careful about that. Just like if you were copying fiction or poetry, that would probably tip this second factor away from fair use and more toward finding that it is not fair use.
And then just a quick, we'll follow on, then we'll get you back to the
sure.
part of your question because everybody's dialed in. The question said that's okay, but they're very interested in journal articles. And
oh, yeah.
That change and fit.
Yeah, that's a really good point. The case is only about books. So we can draw inferences about what it might mean for articles and other types of works. And maybe when you go through these factors, if you're at a nonprofit educational institution, it's the use is purely for your nonprofit teaching, that's going to help you here. I saw a question somebody had in passing, what about for-profit educational organizations? They don't get as much fair use, honestly. It's just starting from this first factor is going to be more troublesome for them than it would be at Georgia State, which is a nonprofit entity. And then the journal article is still going to be a copyrighted, typically nonfiction kind of work. And here we can glean some inferences about, well, maybe we should treat it like a small portion of a larger journal issue and look at it that way rather than looking at it as a freestanding work. And then the effect on the market. This is where we left off when the telephone became problematic. And a key point that I was in the middle of making is that the court was, I don't know, I'm maybe reading something into her opinion, but she seemed to be kind of bothered by the fact that there wasn't an easy, realistic, affordable market for many of these works to digitize them and deliver them to students in digital form. And if there is no easy, affordable market for that, then the court's going to see this factor as tipping in favor of fair use. But if the publishers and if the authors, if other rights holders do make their works available, then it becomes incumbent upon the user, the instructor, the university, the library, to be able to search the market, which frankly it doesn't take a lot of time in most cases, do a quick search, see what's available, assess whether a license is available at a reasonable cost, and then bring that assessment into the equation. Stepping back from these four factors, a main point to make is that no one factor controls. You know, for years and years and years I've heard, but I'm using it for nonprofit education. Doesn't that make it fair use? Well, that might give you a good running head start on factor number one, but you've got three more factors to go. You have to evaluate all of them. Similarly, you can't say from this Georgia State case, if I'm staying within the one chapter or 10% rule, does that mean therefore it's fair use? No, you still have to look at the other factors. Also, you can't say, well, it is available for a license fee at this price. Does that mean that therefore it can't be fair use because it's licensed? No. You take that as one more variable that you put into the mix as you weigh all four factors together. But realistically, what it does mean is that in a strictly nonprofit education, of using excerpts from nonfiction kinds of works, which is probably the bulk of what we do, in using brief excerpts, however we might measure that, especially of a work where there's no realistic license mechanism, then it's looking a whole lot like fair use, according to this judge. Let me get to a few more things. I know we're going to have questions.
I'm going to jump in because there are a lot of questions flying by that I think relate to what you're talking about, and two that I want to make sure we get to. One of them, does limiting the – oh, here it is. Sorry, go ahead.
I missed the question. Oh,
actually, it was exactly what's on your screen. It's a limited use. Does this only enrolled in the course behind a firewall? You know, behind password protection. Things such as the library has two copies, therefore we'll do two digital copies and only those two at a time, and you know, those type
really
of limitations.
Important.
Does that change anything?
All those things are really important. You know, I say a bit more. This is a quotation straight from the court's opinion. Now, I always say more, because I got to emphasize that in these 20 or so slides that run through this whole presentation, there's no way I can do justice to all the details of this case. There's always more. So you're going to want to sit down and talk this over with your advisors, your legal counsel, with whoever it is that's making decisions at your institution. But, for example, access shall be limited only to students who are enrolled in the course in question, and then only for the term of the course. Students must be reminded of the limitations of copyright laws and prohibited by policy from distributing copies to others, and that the use of the work you chose, must fill a demonstrated legitimate purpose in the course curriculum and narrowly tailored to accomplishing that purpose. In other words, no public access, admonish students that we need to be respectful of copyrights, that this is that we're in the exercise of fair use. It's something that if we misuse it, we can lose it. And that we need to understand as faculty members developing curricula, that we need to choose materials because they serve the educational objectives, and not because they're just interesting reading or entertaining or some other purpose. So, and then there's always more. We can dig into this case and find more. And before you ask the next question, let me just kind of wrap up this segment of today's presentation by just mentioning what's next. First, likely, I don't know how likely, it's up to the lawyers, either side, but likely, probably, an appeal to the Court of Appeals. Atlanta is in the 11th Circuit. The United States is divided up into different numbered circuits, and so it'll be appealed there. And depending upon who does not feel satisfied with a ruling there, then the next stop is typically the U.S. Supreme Court. But we'll see. We'll all have to follow this case and see what might be next. But in the meantime, whether you make changes or not, whether this is a final ruling or not, maybe this is a good time to stop and get reacquainted with your policy. Whether it's your policy on e-reserves and the use of materials and course management, or just fair use in general. And let this case, whether it stands or is overturned on appeal, let it be a chance to inform your thinking and have an opportunity to discuss the issues. Determine what your new policy needs might be. Consult colleagues. Consult your legal counsel. And what the court also found, I think, important in the analysis was the fact that when Georgia implemented a new policy, they went on a well-organized initiative to begin educating faculty, educating the community, sharing the policy out, holding workshops, have people available to answer questions, to provide the support. That's really important too. And so other universities should look very closely at whether this is the right time to begin to have different workshops and programs and expand the knowledge of copyright on their campuses. Now, at this point, I did pose a polling question, but we can go to that. And while we're doing that, Mark?
So Kenny, I'm going to jump in. We have 6 minutes left, and I need a minute to close. For folks online, there's a survey as well as the links will be put at the end of this to see that, to listen to the stream again. Couple things that keep coming up, and a lot of people are still uncomfortable with not having an answer, and that is about streaming of full-length works. And It relates. I can see in an art type class, you might want to do a full video and then analyze it, or in a theater class or a film class or something. Does that make a difference? Can you do that and do it online if you have an online class?
Good question. We could analyze that two different ways. One way is fair use, assuming it's a copyrighted work, et cetera, et cetera. One way is fair use, and we could go through the four factors, and honestly, where we're probably going to have a little tug of war is going to be over the amount and whether it's appropriate to use the whole thing or a large share of it, and then the effect on the market. This is where my answer is going to be, it depends, because I'm going to want to know exactly what is that film that you are transmitting. So we go to the four factors depend upon knowing many more facts than just a general question can cover. Let me tell you the other way that you could approach it under the exceptions. We could always go out and try to get permission. We could always go out and try to buy more copies. Do keep those options in mind. But under the exceptions, Code Section 110 has two subparts that are relevant here. One is showing the film in the live face-to-face classroom, and that's generally allowed. But that involves no copying, and that means the students are in the room or the same general vicinity. The other part of Code Section 110 is the so-called Teach Act. And the Teach Act lets you transmit out to students at remote locations audiovisual materials, but subject to numerous conditions and restrictions that you have to put in place, and then only for certain portions of the work. And the law doesn't give an exact measure. One official report from Congress actually said that under some circumstances 100% may be acceptable, but I think that would be the unusual situation for sure. But those are the two ways that I would begin to approach that question.
Okay. We're running short on time, so I think I'm going to let you close out and maybe then look at the questions and see if you'd like to add those to the final tag. So go ahead and take another minute, and if you want to close out.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. And really, the one-minute version of a wrap-up is really get involved. Take action. Take control, become an active participant in these issues in your organizations, exercise fair use. What is fair use? You know, that's what we have to evaluate, but it exists for the benefit of all of us, including publishers. They're using fair use all the time. So exercise it as appropriate. Build your support team, the people you can count on to work with you. Apply these legal principles, inform your colleagues, and then also sort of complete the loop. This has been all about fair use and has not at all been about ownership of new works, publication agreements, but that's frankly part of the overall equation, because one of the reasons why we struggle with the appropriate use of these scholarly works is because frequently our colleagues are the ones who wrote them and then transferred the copyrights away. So encourage open access, encourage better publication agreements that don't give away all rights, so that we continue to make our new works available to the community. And if you wouldn't mind, click a few more boxes, because I've got one last question, and before you sign off, I'd love to have a few clicks on this to give me some thoughts. I know we're all going to be tempted to say all of the above, but take a stab at saying, what do I really want first or most when I start to develop a policy at my institution? And that said, I saw some brilliant questions go by, questions about journal articles, questions about more questions about films and clips. If we had all day, I would love to be able to stay here and answer them. But Mark, I'm going to have to hand it over to you and ask for your help in how we wrap this up.
Thank you much. And everyone, I know there's more. Kenny, I'm going to ask you if you're willing to take some of those questions, answer them, and they can probably incorporate those into the available online material. For everybody still online, the material, the entire streaming conversation today is saved at the website, and there's a poll that we'd love you to take if you're interested. It's up on the website right now. Kenny, on behalf of everybody, through our technical difficulties and all, I appreciate your strong effort. Clearly, this is a hot topic, and people are very interested, and probably ought to do some sessions at EDUCAUSE to have more questions. Be a great panel session.
Well, my pleasure, and I thank you very much.
This has been a production of EDUCAUSE Live of the Higher Education Technology Association, and I'm Mark Hoyt, bidding you goodbye until the next time we meet. Thank you all for joining us. So I'm assuming everybody is still online, folks. So
there will
Shannon,
be people.
So I'm we'll just kind of close out and talk next
yes.
time.
Yes, Kenny, I'll give you a quick check with an email. Some folks have some questions I thought you and I might be able to answer, and I could throw up in a Word document on the resource page.
Oh, maybe Kenny left.
I lost him. All right, I'll check with him later. All right, bye-bye,
Mark,
and everybody.
Everybody.